Let's go. It's Wednesday morning. We begin first up here on TSN 1050. Aaron Korolnik and Carlo Kolyak. Of a late night for the fellas. A very late night. A couple of overtime games in the Stanley Cup playoffs. Double overtime, in fact. The Rangers. Wow, what a performance from Shesterkin. Vinny Trocheck in double overtime. He gets it done. New York up 2-0 on Carolina. And then the Dallas Stars, they take a 3-0 lead. Colorado is dead and buried, right? No. They have Cale Makar. They have Nathan MacKinnon. They've got Nichushkin. They've got Miles Wood, who scored in overtime. Running on very little sleep. But, man, am I fired up for today's show to talk about hockey, but also to absolutely roast the Toronto Blue Jays, who are an abject disaster, a truly pitiful baseball team where even Jose Berríos is like, listen, I've given you guys enough great starts this year. I'm just going to get pummeled myself. He gets torched. Man, I'm feeling good. How you doing?
Feeling sunburned again. That's how I'm feeling. Great feeling to feel a little sunburned because that means the weather is turning and the weather is changing, and it's great to be out in the sun and get some natural vitamin D in you. But, man, just waking up this morning and seeing some of the craziness that transpired overnight while we were sleeping. I mean, I couldn't stay up for the overtime in New York. I watched most of that game before it went to overtime, and Carolina put up like 50-plus shots in that game.
50, I think it was like 51 shots. They were great. Carolina's
great.
Team.
And to think to wake up this morning and see that they lost in double OT and down 2-0. And then I went to bed too, and it was 3-0 Dallas. And I'm like, wow, Dallas is going to use this momentum after they beat Vegas and, you know, take control of this series. And I'm like, I wake up to an alert on my phone saying, Miles Wood with the OT winner and Colorado's comeback win. I'm like, what the hell did I miss? And wild night in hockey. Wow. But this is the type of hockey that most of us expected to see in the first round, right? Where you saw a little high-scoring games, some overtime games, some awesome action. I got to be honest with you, the first round was kind of lame.
We had to watch those Leafs Bruins games where everything was 2-1, 3-1, like just so like low event and not exciting at all with regards to the scoreboard. And now you're seeing these games where like 4-3 final in Rangers Carolina, 4-3 Colorado. I think tonight you're going to see some fireworks with Edmonton and Vancouver. Unfortunately, nobody on the East Coast will see a single second of this game, which drops the puck after 10 p.m. Eastern, which I'm just still so frustrated by. And I guess it's a byproduct of doing this job, is that we got to go to sleep at a reasonable hour. Mm. And this game between Edmonton and Vancouver is going to end at like 12:30. So, you know, it's not really easy for us to stay up and watch it as much as I would love to, because these are the two Canadian teams that are left. And I mean, it's super fun watching McDavid do his thing in the Stanley Cup playoffs. And I don't know what the answer is. I don't think there really is one. I don't think in Vancouver they want 5 p.m. local puck drops. Mm-hmm. They'd probably rather have 7 p.m. local puck drops, which is what they have tonight. But it's just disappointing. I don't know if there is anything they can
do,
but it is what it is. And I'm sure a lot of people on the East Coast here in Toronto are disappointed by it too.
I mean, when you get a chance to watch McDavid and company, and you can't watch them because your body just can't stay up that late because you've got other obligations to worry about. It's unfortunate. It's unfortunate. But we all know that the TV world dominates scheduling, and this is the scheduling that they've come up with. So it is what it is. We just hope that, you know, we get the same type of entertainment that we've been blessed with at least last night with those two games. I mean, the Rangers-Carolina series has had 2-4-3 games back-to-back. And Colorado-Dallas starts like that. We did see a lot of trendy unders in the first round with scoring. And so far in the second round, every game's gone over. You can even go back to the Boston-Florida game, right? Where it's 5-1. So should be getting more exciting. And as we continue to watch second-round playoff hockey, we continue to digest more Maple Leafs news, right? I mean, it is what it is until Friday, where me and you were out again yesterday on the golf course. And while we were there, how many conversations did we have with people that we saw countless. About, you know, the Maple Leafs and their struggles and their failures and what's going to be next? And we still don't know. We still don't know those answers. Obviously, the big boys are all going to speak on Friday. What happens between now and then still is debated and still is up in the air. And there's a lot of speculation around the coach. And I asked you this question yesterday. I said, when it comes to the coach, if there was a can't-miss coach out there right now that the Maple Leafs said, we have to have this guy, don't you think he would have been hired already?
Who would you qualify as a can't-miss coach? Like, I guess says Craig Berube is not a can't-miss coach to you?
Not, no.
So who is?
No, on the market right now, nobody is.
Like, oh, so Brindamore Moore would be a can't-miss coach for you?
John Cooper would be a can't-miss coach.
John Cooper would be?
You know what I mean? To me, I just like they last played on Saturday. They had all week last week, the week before. Like when they were down 3-1, you'd have to think that this conversation or this idea about replacing the coach was either discussed or thought about. We're 4 days removed now since the last game of the season. If that was something that they were thinking, don't you think they would have done it by now? If there was a guy out there that they basically said, we have to have this guy?
I think it was discussed and thought about last year, too, after they lost to Florida, right? Where I don't think that it's they accepted that five-game defeat to the Panthers where they scored two or fewer goals. They're like, all right, Sheldon keeps coming back immediately. Like that wasn't their first inclination. I think they explored a number of different things. So, and that wasn't tree living, I guess, at the time. But I guess it was after Dubas they didn't really commit to.
Well, here's the thing
at that point either. But
last year it's
interesting.
Last year, they had every intention to bring everybody back, including Kyle Dubas. They offered him a contract extension.
Yeah,
and so when that whole thing fell apart, the Maple Leafs' first priority was to hire a GM, not to replace the coach. They went through that process. They bring in Tree Living, and Tree Living had to do his due diligence. He had to take his time. And but at that time, this is after free agency, and you're not going to fire a coach at that time because there's what candidates out there. I just you look at the potential candidates. Yeah, Berube is a favorite on everybody's list, but if he was a guy that the Maple Leafs were targeting and a guy that they felt like they needed to have, don't you think it would have been done by now?
You're probably right. And there are reports that Berube is linked to
New Jersey's
vacancy. And
right?
I guess Winnipeg's now looking for a coach. San Jose is looking for a coach. And they get the number one overall pick last night in the draft in June, where they'll pick up Celebrini. And I don't know how much that's a horrible
production for this draft lottery. Like, you talk about suspense. None of it. Nobody moved.
It's not a horrible production. It's just how the lottery balls went.
I get it, but it's usually the lottery ball would present some sort of different formula or different.
You wanted the fix to be in, like we thought that John Buchergras.
No, I just figured that at least one team would move. Nobody moved. It's like, okay, well, what was the point of having this?
Yeah, it's true. I think for the first time since 2011, nothing changed.
Or 11,
2010,
yeah.
Nothing changed on the board. So everyone who was slotted to begin the draft lottery ended up where they should have been.
The order that we went into the lottery with was the order that it finished with. And look, congratulations to San Jose.
Celebrini will see you maybe in the playoffs in 6 years, but probably won't see you play until then, except for highlights. Because San Jose, those are 10:30 puck drops. No one will see you. And we're not going to see Celebrini at the World Hockey Championships either, which is extremely peculiar to me. Why? Oh, Pierre-Luc Dubois is available? Come on over, PLD. We need you. What's the logic there? Do I think Dubois is better right now than Celebrini? Yeah. But come on. Like, what are we doing here? Like,
look,
let the kid play. You already said he was good on the team.
Look, here's the thing I always, when the players had a chance after the season to be selected to the World Hockey Championship teams, it felt like a reward. It's like, hey, you had a great season, you know, and not all the great players go to the World Hockey Championships, but there's a lot of other good players, sometimes great players, that get the chance to represent depending on what type of season their teams have. But I always felt like the World Hockey Championships was a reward for some guys based on the seasons they've had. How is selecting Pierre-Luc Dubois a reward for him in the season that he had, which was god-awful?
Probably trying. Maybe it's like a favor to the agent or something like that. Yeah, we'll get him on the team, and then, you know, you'll hook us up with another free agent deal somewhere along the line.
But hold on a second. Rick Nash and Kyle Dubas are the GMs of this team. Is the favor to return Pierre-Luc Dubois to Columbus? Is the favor to look at a Pierre-Luc Dubois deal to Pittsburgh?
I don't
get it.
No one's maybe just to re.
That's the confusing part for me, because
I don't get it either.
When I played in the World Championships in 2011, I had a really good season. I played on one of the best teams in the league. My partner was Alex Pietrangelo. He was selected. I was selected. It was almost like we were going together. We did. We played together when we were there. But I don't understand this Pierre-Luc Dubois move. When a guy like Celebrini and Fantilli had already committed, they were there. Look, Fantilli, I can understand. This guy missed the second half of the season, right? And you're giving him an opportunity to play again. Celebrini, obviously, that would have been a great grab for Canada because he's a marquee name coming up into the draft, and there'd be a lot of excitement as he's a young player with some of the other young players they have there. I don't understand this Pierre-Luc Dubois deal. I really don't. This is not a reward for the season that he's had.
My guess is, and I'm sure if Rick Nash was asked a question, and he will be asked a question, he'll be like, Pierre-Luc Dubois has been a really good hockey player for the majority of his career. Yes, he had a really bad year in L.A., but we want him on our team because we think he can help us win this year. And
that's fair. It's
fair for Nash, but I guess as a fan, I just wanted to see Celebrini and Fantilli, our boy, just to get them that exposure and that experience on the world stage, which I'm extremely excited for the World Hockey Championships, mostly
to see you
on broadcast at 6 a.m. on the weekends. Well, I'm gonna set alarm 6 a.m. It's like, all right, Great Britain and Poland featuring Carlo Koliakova. Let's go.
I get lucky because my first game ever doing is this Saturday at 6 a.m. and I get Canada versus Great Britain. So at least I get the Canada game. Right, and then
what is the spread going to be in Canada versus Great Britain? Canada minus 13.5, 14.5.
I don't think it'll be that big.
Who's on Great Britain? Harry Kane?
I believe, if I'm not mistaken, a couple years ago, Great Britain had an upset. I don't know if it was against Canada or if it was against somebody else, but they did win a big game at one of the World Championships. Maybe, Cam, you can look that up. But the other game that is scheduled at that same time slot is France versus Kazakhstan. Oh,
nice. Nick Antropov will be waking up early for that one.
So the challenge for me is accepting this new World Hockey Championships role, which I'm super pumped about because I've been waiting for this type of opportunity for a long time, is doing the 6 a.m. games. I have to be in studio at 5 o'clock. Like, usually when we're in studio for radio and we're on at 6 a.m., I can stroll in at like 5:30, 5:45, you know. But I'm up at 4:30 that morning because I have to travel in. To be there for 5 a.m., it means I got to get up at 4.
Oh, yeah, baby. That's a Saturday morning in the summertime. All the fellas are on the course just sipping back some sandbaggers. I'll be texting you, hey, how's the Poland-Kazakhstan game going?
Yeah.
And you'll be like, never message me again. I hate you. And I would understand that. I would understand that.
Yeah.
But you got to do what you got to do. I mean, it's an exciting tournament. It's a great property. Yeah. And Canada, the Americans, Sweden, Finland, they put together some really quality rosters. I think it's going to be a very compelling tournament. By the way, thank you to 20 Fingers who acknowledged my Harry Kane reference. I love footy. I love footy. Everybody knows that here at TSN 1050.
Well, 20 Fingers also said that Canada is minus 7.5 favorites against Great Britain on FanDuel.
All right. Give me the Brits. They're my secondary team.
The Brits? Plus seven and a half?
Nah, probably not. I don't think I'm betting on... Actually, that's not true. I have placed a significant wager on the U.S. team at plus 700, which is now plus 250. They're now the favorites. Got ahead of the market. Way to go, Aaron. Way to go, Aaron. Now, they did lose my boy Larks. Dylan Larkin, who we love on the show. Mm-hmm. Power Edge Pro legend. Yeah, he pulled out of the tournament, which is a big loss for my Americans. For my Americans. Oh, say, can you see? Okay. Steve Phillips, in 15 minutes, we'll talk about the debacle that was for the Toronto Blue Jays. Every time we talk to Steve Phillips, it's the same thing.
But you know what? He always says, be patient, it's going to turn around.
No, he doesn't. Steve doesn't say that. Nobody believes that anymore. The Jays are done. It's over. They suck. End of story. And there need to be heads that have to roll. And I think they will roll soon. Like, you cannot tell me that they're not going to make some significant change coming up here. They will. Because this team is melting down night after night. They're now 16-20. Philadelphia tees off on Berríos. And if Berríos is getting teed off on, man, that's not a good sign for the rest of the rotation.
No.
They play game two today. We'll talk about Jamal Murray, who avoids the suspension somehow. That's good news.
I don't get it.
I have no idea. We'll talk to Ryan Hollins at 8:15 about that. And Shea Gilgeous-Alexander's fit coming into last night's game. Did you see that thing he was wearing?
I did not.
You're going to want to check that one out. It looked as if he was lathered in peanut butter walking in to the arena. I know it's hard to describe anything except for that. We'll tweet it out on the First Up account if you want to see what SGA was wearing. Also, my outfit on Friday night as I visit some local establishments. I don't think I could pull it off. All right, hour one. We continue. Steve Phillips in about 15 minutes. This is First Up. Talk to Steve Phillips in 10 minutes. The Jays, man. Get crushed. John Schneider had a literal meltdown as well on the field after a...
Do you blame him?
Well, I think he's just frustrated about his team more so than anything. And there was a check swing that went against the Toronto Blue Jays on Schwarber. And then Harper hits a massive grand slam off Berríos. The game was done. The Jays lose 10-1. But I feel bad for John Schneider. I don't think he's a good manager. I will be fully transparent in saying that, but there is no manager in the history of baseball that can do anything if Bo Bichette is hitting 189. He is hitting 189. Mm-hmm. George Springer's hitting 206. What do you want? What do you want from John Schneider? And I feel, man, like there's a lot of Leafs and Blue Jays parallels right now where Schneider's probably going to get fired, probably quite soon, and I don't know what the deal is with Sheldon Keefe. I'm still under the impression that he will likely be out as well, but I'm sure Keefe and Schneider are texting one another, like, where they're like, what do you want us to do here if our players don't perform? And it's something that's been happening with the Jays for a long time and happened with the Leafs in the playoffs for a long time. There are definitely parallels between the two situations.
There are, for sure. And look, I think, you know, let's start with the Blue Jays. It would be very disturbing to see John Schneider lose his job before somebody in management.
Completely agree.
Because this roster sucks. Has its management's fingerprints all over it. All over it. And this is going back to last year. It's going back to last year where all season, the same things we see now were happening last year. And it was their pitching that kept them alive. And if I'm a pitcher on this Toronto Blue Jays team, I'm absolutely losing my mind.
Well, Berríos didn't do them any favors yesterday either. He'd give up eight earned runs.
I get it, but how many times do you expect him to have? Like, he's probably thinking to himself, oh my God, I have one bad start and I can't even be even close into a game. It's like, if I don't pitch a perfect game, I can't even give myself a chance to win. Because every pitcher walks to that mound saying, how much run support am I going to get tonight? Like, that's the mood, and that could create, and if you just listen to Chris Bassitt talk, especially the last couple of times, that's a guy ready to blow a gasket. And you can probably understand the type of divide that will create in the locker room. Believe me, I've been in those locker rooms where you have a certain expectation for certain players on your team, and your team results aren't matching the expectations, and then there's clicks that start to get created in the group, and guys are talking about the forwards, the forwards are talking about the D, and it just becomes toxic. And you'd have to imagine this is what this Blue Jays locker room is turning into, where the pitchers probably all sit on one side of the room, and they're just absolutely chirping the crap out of the batters. And the batters on the other side of the room probably chirping the crap out of themselves.
And a bullpen, which is terrible.
And then they're probably looking at the pitchers and saying, man, I don't want to go over there, man. These guys are going to lose their mind on me.
So in defense of Atkins, and I'm hesitant, and Shapiro, I'm hesitant to do that, the general manager, the president. If I told you at the beginning of the season that Bo Bichette would be hitting below 200, George Springer would be hitting 200, and Vladimir Guerrero would be hitting 230 in the early parts of March, you'd be like, all right, this team is 10 games under 500, 15 games under 500. They're done. And in fact, they're 4 games under 500, which is a testament to the starting pitching more so than anything. So, yeah, I think Atkins did a really bad job in the offseason. I've been saying this since the offseason concluded. And I also think the Blue Jays' best players are horrific right now. Horrific. So whose fault is that? At the end of the day, you can blame Atkins. You can blame John Schneider. Look, but it goes down to the players.
Yep.
Bo Bichette is hitting 189. That's your franchise cornerstone.
AK, you're seeing your best players struggle at the plate. You're seeing your other best player struggle at the plate. Your other best player, who's Vlad Guerrero Jr., struggled almost most of the time last year. How are you not changing the hitting philosophy around this team? How are you not having new faces and new voices working with these guys?
So what the Jays did, what the Jays did last offseason was run it back with the same group, essentially bring in Turner and Kiner Falefa and Kevin Kiermaier, and the same coaching staff's back, right? Guillermo Martinez is their hitting coach. Don Mattingly's back. John Schneider's back. Atkins is back. Shapiro's back. The whole band is back. Mm. And this is the result you get, something that shouldn't surprise anybody. And now for the Toronto Maple Leafs, are they really going to do the same thing the Toronto Blue Jays did last offseason?
Yeah.
Run it back once again?
But the Toronto Maple Leafs have consistently been a really good regular season team.
Yes.
Really good.
Correct.
And they have
Their top players
have been consistently good throughout the regular season. And look, I'm not going to sit here and defend their playoff results, because it's indefensible. I mean, their top players don't show up in the playoffs again, and they exit in the first round again. But at least they're still having success. This Blue Jays team. Like, the story that's written with the Maple Leafs is that they get eliminated the same way almost every time they're in the playoffs. The consistent thing with the Blue Jays is they can't hit. In Major League Baseball,
they don't win any games in the playoffs. They lost every game in the wild card round over the last 3 years. At least the Leafs do pick up a couple wins. All right, yeah. I like that. Positivity. Couple wins in the first round, a second round appearance last year. So,
and look,
there is that.
If I'm the management of the Toronto Blue Jays, like, your last option right now should be to think about firing the coach. Your first option should be, okay, if I can't go out and trade for a player, then maybe let's bring in a different hitting philosophy. Maybe let's try to bring in a guy who's brings a different mindset to our approach at the plate. Maybe that's your first option. The fact that that hasn't even been explored yet.
Well, we don't know if it hasn't been explored, but it just hasn't happened yet.
It hasn't happened, okay? That it's almost like you have to try different phases before you get to the...
Yeah, you got to create something. Throw the fan base a bone, please.
Bring Joey Votto in. I don't know.
Joey Votto, apparently, we talked about Joey Votto. He's not even close to playing baseball. Hasn't swung a bat since he hurt his ankle like 3 months ago.
Seriously?
Yeah, man. Joey Votto's not an option. He's not. He's done. And he's talking about how he wants to get to 100% before he suits up again. And that's a long way away. Joey Votto's not the savior of this baseball team, I can tell you that.
I'm not saying he is, but like, you're trying to bring in a different personality, a different...
Yeah, maybe Joey Votto could be the hitting coach. Maybe that could be the case. I don't know. But there's no answers right now. It's just a disaster for the Toronto Blue Jays. They lose again last night, 16-20. We'll talk about that with Steve Phillips. We have the first up scoreboard to come. We'll tell you about the NBA story last night, and we'll be joined by Frank Corrado for Leafs Breakfast at 7:40. We'll find out what Frank thinks the Maple Leafs should do here with some of their burning off-season questions. We'll go to their coach and their best players. That is all ahead. So we were talking about doing a segment a little bit later today that delved into all of the Toronto Maple Leafs locker room cleanouts over the years and try to differentiate which year they're coming from. So is that from 2018? Is that from 2023? Because the conversations are the same. The Toronto Maple Leafs lose in the first round, maybe even early in the second round like last year, and they talk about, oh, it was a great effort, yada, 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 but close. We didn't get it done. It was close. It was close. And I feel like our conversations with our next guest, Steve Phillips, are delving into the same territory now, where the Toronto Blue Jays lose again last night. They weren't even close. Philly destroyed them. Philly may be the best team in baseball, now 26-11. And the Blue Jays are now 16-20, and Berríos gets destroyed. They don't produce any offense. Same old story for the Toronto Blue Jays. But maybe Steve Phillips has a positive outlook on what happened last night and what's been happening with the Jays. Steve, are you able to conjure anything positive up for us? Good morning.
Oh, yeah. No, I would say that the game yesterday was deceptive in that it was actually worse than it looked. it's pretty awful right now. And that was a drubbing, and that was a, you know, that was a team that's red hot, believing in themselves, confident, and really everybody contributing versus a team where everybody is, they're sort of competing against themselves right now is what it looks like. The Jays hitters, they're up there competing against themselves and the other team, and that becomes that much more difficult that, you know, they're in their own head. They're so introspective with everything because that's what happens when you struggle. And you know, that's why they say sometimes, and this is not what I'm calling for, but when you get into a fight or a brawl, all of a sudden it sparks teams because instead of looking into yourself, you've got a target on the outside now and you start dwelling on all of the negative thoughts that you have about yourself and you get out there and quote unquote fight against the other team and compete against the other team. And that's happened a lot over the years where teams finally get sparked by it, but they've got to find a way to compete against the Phillies instead of competing against themselves in a game against the Phillies, who are so good that if you don't compete against them and go out there and try to make adjustments and think about what they're trying to do to you instead of thinking about what you're doing, you have no chance to beat them. And hopefully that made sense, but that is what's going on. And I've experienced it with my own teams. I've done it myself as a player where you get so introspective in thought about here are my hands. Where's my stride? What am I doing? What am I thinking? What am I looking for right here? And then boom, it's strike three. And then we've lost another game. And that's where this team is right now. It's a collective slump. And you know, there are days where your starting pitching is not going to be great, but you've got to pick them up by scoring runs. They don't have that capability at all.
Yeah.
And that's the biggest concern is they've got a chance to win a certain kind of game. And man, you need so much to go right in those games. So they've created a very narrow path for themselves to come away with victories.
Steve, how much longer can the patience of this fan base put up with what they're watching? I mean, Bo Bichette is struggling like we've never seen him before. Vladdy Guerrero Jr. is not anywhere close to what we expect him to be. Every time a starting pitcher goes onto the mound, he's probably asking himself, man, what type of game is this going to be? How many runs am I going to get in support? And then you finally see the frustrations boil over yesterday with John Schneider basically blowing a gasket. And then he comes out after the game and says, the mood is fine. Like, how much longer are we supposed to put up with watching what we're watching?
Yeah, so, you know, that's going to come down to each individual fan because, you know, I think everybody's going to have to make that decision for themselves. And I think you're at that boiling point yourself right now, and I can hear it, and I felt it coming that way over the last couple of weeks. I think that the question is, and again, I am not one to, like, I having been fired, it's a horrible thing. And having fired people, it's a horrible thing. People that I've liked and that I respect and that I care about, whose families I care about. And my family having, you know, with me getting fired and how that affects families and how it makes you feel and you know, how it makes kids feel. You know, there's so much that goes into it. But within the Jays front office right now, they have to be thinking to themselves, okay, what can we do, right? It's about problem solving. It's identifying the problems and then problem solving. And, you know, I've had times when I've changed coaches and not the manager. There have been times when it worked. I did it. We were 27 and 28 at one point, and I felt like we were not really engaging our players the way that we should. And unfortunately, I had made a decision after a Yankee series, interleague play in 98, I guess it was, that it was 98, that I was going to change coaches. No, it was in 99, sorry. And I was going to change the coaches, and it leaked out, you know, and I got an idea about how it leaked out, but it leaked out. And I had not told the manager I was going to do it, but it leaked out on the Saturday going into the Sunday. And we had an off day Monday when I was going to do it. And so I ended up having to call the coaches in that Saturday night, told them that I was making the change, and I'm sorry that it leaked out and it's unprofessional and inappropriate, made the change. And my manager was not happy, Bobby Valentine. And at the time that he said, well, this doesn't make any sense, you know, this and that. Yet I knew that he was not, I mean, he didn't want blood on his hands, and that's why I didn't tell him. I didn't want blood on his hands. I didn't want everyone in the media to write that Bobby had his coaches fired. That would have put it down on him. I didn't do it. And so I put it on me. And he had said at the time, well, ask me after the next 55 games whether it was the right thing to do. We went 40 and 15 in the next 55 games. It turned everything around. And what it did was, you know, Bobby was, you know, he had his guys coaching. But what he would do is he would say, okay, to the hitting coach, hey, Robbie, do this, this, and this with him. Okay, Skip, I got it. Then, you know, I went down and I went into the video room, and Bobby was in there with one of the pitchers, moving him from one side of the pitching rubber to the other, telling him how I thought he would work with his sinker and everything else. And the pitching coach wasn't there. And I thought, wait a minute. Like, I can't have my manager being my hitting coach and my pitching coach. I need him to manage. And so I brought in guys who were sort of independent contractors for the organization as opposed to his guys. And it was awkward, very awkward for them and for him. But for the players, it opened up their minds. You know, even if the coaches might have said the same thing in a different voice, somehow it resonated through. And it changed things. We made the playoffs that year. We were 27 and 28, and we came storming back. We ended up winning 95 games that year, in a play-in game against the Cincinnati Reds. And Al Leiter threw a, 5-0 shutout that day to advance us to the playoffs. And so, you got to at least start to talk about it internally. And, you know, again, it's not exclusively a coaching problem or a managerial problem, but you can't fire the players. And so you've got to consider what changes can be made to try to spark something with your team.
So you mentioned the players, and Carlo and I talked about this earlier. If I told you at the beginning of the season, Bo Bichette would be hitting below 200, 33 games into the season, and Vladdy's hitting 230 and Springer's hitting 206, you'd be like, yeah, this is probably going to be a very bad baseball team. So how do you try to balance the idea of, maybe not blaming is the right word, but holding the manager responsible, management responsible, while at the, you know, at the crux of this problem is that the players who the Blue Jays rely on aren't doing anything. Bo Bichette is an OPS of 514, almost 300 points below, more than 300 points below his career norm. Like, what is going on with him, and how long can we reasonably expect this to continue, not only with Bichette, but with Springer as well, who's been terrible?
Yeah. So, right, this is about the internal improvements, and it's one of the focal points that they had last year. Now, where I had an issue with the plan coming in was, you know, the assumption, and I think it was a naive assumption to believe what we're going to do to be better this year is we're going to fix the guys who struggled last year and everybody else will be as good as they were last year, this year. And so the guys who were good will just be as good this year. Our pitching was great last year. We'll be great again this year. And it didn't take into account potential and likely regression toward the mean, right? That you know, not everybody's going to be exactly the same from year to year. And people who have had, you know, up seasons oftentimes come back a little bit in their performance. Doesn't have to be a lot. Sometimes it can be a lot, but sometimes it's not. Some stay the same, but they don't all stay the same. And so, you know, yes, you might get better performance from the guys who underperformed, but you're going to get underperformance from the guys who performed well. And they didn't take that into account when they thought about what will be the overall performance of the team. That's why you need to bring in new and improved personnel so that you're better, that if you do have some regression, you've covered it. And when you get the progression from some of those guys who struggled, they cover it too. Now, for Bichette, look, this is really on him right now. He's over trying. He's looking at his numbers on the scoreboard, and he's trying to get three hits with one swing of the bat. And he's got to get back to the belief that sometimes the best way to hit is to take. And it's not part of his wiring. He's a swinger. He's not a taker, right? He's a guy that he'll swing at the 2-0 pitch. If it's a fastball anywhere near the plate, he's going to swing at it. 3-1 pitch near the plate, he's going to look to try to hit it. And sometimes you have to take the walk, and then when you find yourself in better counts, you start to get pitches that you're confident you can drive, and you start to take advantage of it. He will come out of it. He will have a hot streak. I don't know, there's no question he will. The question is, will it be enough? And will it happen in tandem with Vladdy getting hotter than he is, and or Springer getting hotter than he is? And I think that they've got to get to the point where they cannot hold on to a belief that, you know, Springer batting first is the way he's going to break out of his slump. I mean, you know, if it makes him comfortable, but maybe it's time to make them uncomfortable, right? And I know they moved Bichette down to the lineup, but I think that it wouldn't be the worst thing. Like, I look at David Schneider, you know, he's a threat at the plate when he's up. And, you know, he's battling at the plate. But when you've got a lineup of an OPS of 579, 700, you know, Turner's doing well, but 514, 407 for Vogelbach pinch hitting, 582 for Kirk, 658 for Kiner Falefa, and 520 for Kiermaier, you're not going to score a lot of runs. And so you need, and you can't count on the complementary players to produce better. They're better when your stars perform well. When the stars perform well, it makes everybody else in the lineup better. Now everybody's trying to do too much because the stars aren't producing, and they're all trying to do more than they're capable of doing. And so it's a collective slump. And on the other side of it, you look at the Phillies, everybody's hitting. Everybody's driving the ball. Everybody's getting on base. And it really is the difference right now between a really, really hot team and a really, really cold team. And it looks so obvious that one doesn't belong on the field with the other.
And we're going to see him on the field today just after 1 o'clock. It'll be Chris Bassett pitching for Toronto against Aaron Nola of the Phillies, who's been really, really good this year. So don't expect a lot of offense from the Jays. They're going to need something special from Bassett today. Always special to talk to you, my friend. Thank you for doing this, Steve.
You bet, guys. Always great to be on.
Thank you. That's our MLB analyst, Steve Phillips. Got to do something. Just do anything. Throw the fans a bone who spend their hard-earned dollars watching this dreadful baseball team at the plate every single night.
Look, the first move I would think about doing is replacing the hitting coach. Simple as that.
It's the easiest move.
And just bring a different approach. Anything. To these guys, you know.
How is George Springer still hitting leadoff?
Yeah.
Like, what is this? This is not 2017 anymore. He's lost it. He's my age. He's ancient.
Who would you bat lead on?
I don't. David Schneider. I don't care. Anybody else. Somebody who's at least hitting.
I was asking for an opinion. Not.
I know it sounds crazy. Like, George Springer's been such a great player with a great track record.
Yeah, but all good things come to an end, man.
Yeah, I think it probably has. It was pretty evident at the end of last season that he was slowing down as well. All right, we'll get to the scoreboard on the other side. Frankie Corrado in less than an hour. This is the First Up scoreboard. A quick rundown of what happened last night in the world of sports. The Jays lose 10-1 to Philly. Not good. Not good. The Rangers in the National Hockey League beat the Carolina Hurricanes 4-3 in double overtime. It's Vincent Trocheck on the power play. A very questionable penalty on the Carolina Hurricanes.
Yeah, I saw that. I'm
brutal
like, what
call.
The hell? Come on. It's
brutal call.
What are we doing?
Yeah, that was an embarrassment. So Carolina, they're down 2-0 to the Rangers as they head back to Carolina ahead of game at number 3 later this week. Colorado storming back from a 3-0 deficit to beat Dallas in overtime. It's Miles Wood who scores about 11 minutes into the first overtime. Colorado takes game 1 there. And in the NBA, Boston destroys Cleveland by 25 to take a 1-0 series lead. And Oklahoma City, 117-95 over Dallas. Shai Gilgeous-Alexander, 29 points, 9 boards, 9 assists, outdueling Luka Doncic in game number 1 and outdressing him as well with his peanut butter outfit. Hour 2 is coming up. Frankie Corrado will join us. We'll play Bang or What as well. And we'll talk about the Toronto Maple Leafs. What could be coming here in the coming days? All that ahead.